Across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world, on the internet, by webcast, and by podcast, my name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Unexplained. At the very, very back end of the British summer and the beginning of autumn time, the leaves are beginning to turn brown, the sky is golden right now as I'm recording this, and the temperature's still up to, what, 18, 20 degrees Celsius? About 68 Fahrenheit thereabouts, so what's not to like? So much did I like it, I decided today I had to go and do a little bit of shopping just before I recorded this, and I went by bike. Didn't get in the car, because that's very lazy and not very good for me. So if I sound very slightly more breathless than usual, that's the reason I've literally just got off my bike to come in and record this. I didn't realise the time. I'd arranged an interview, and here we go. So I've got a cold bottle of water here, and I'm just going to take a little swig of it. Yeah, I know professional announcers don't do that, but needs must. No shout-outs on this edition, apart from one person, James Sklar. James, nice to hear from you. There is your shout-out. I know you didn't get it on the last edition. James Sklar, thank you. And just very quickly, Scott got in touch. He wants to hear JC on this show. Now, if you used to listen to Art Bell, you will know that periodically Art would take a call from JC. And this would be somebody screaming fire and brimstone at Art, saying, "Your listeners, the best place for them is boiling pits of sewage." It was very entertaining. I used to think that it was all staged. And then, over the years and months, I realised that Art didn't know when JC was going to call. JC knew when JC was going to call, but the whole thing was right off the cuff. JC, email me, and I would love to have a conversation with you. What we call them in Britain, a chat, here on this radio show. Or this audio show. I'm getting carried away now. I think I was cycling too hard. Ben got in touch in Chicago, just very quickly, to ask me one question. Do I pay my guests? Absolutely, positively, definitely no, Ben. And if you do something like this and somebody asks you for money, then just don't pay, because there's something wrong. A lot of the people I talk to, they've got books out, they want to promote something. You give them one or two chances to do that, and the trade-off there is that you get the chance to probe them on your behalf. Don't pay anyone anything, because it doesn't work that way. So I hope that kind of answers the question. Thank you to Adam Cornwell, my webmaster at Creative Hotspot in Liverpool, for devising the website, getting the show out to you, all the rest of it. Thanks, Adam. We're still getting your views in about future funding models for this show. If we want to develop it and make it much bigger in 2015, what do we do? Not being hereditarily wealthy, there has to be a way to make this happen, and that keeps everybody happy. One person suggested, in fact, a few of you suggested, that I take the likes of Google Ads and that sort of stuff. Well, I did for a while, and I stopped. And the reason I stopped was that some of the ads that were being placed on my site by them were ads for dating sites and numbers and psychic hotlines. Now, you know, people have their businesses to run. I'm not going to comment about them, but I don't want psychic hotlines on the homepage of my website. Thank you very much. So I stopped, and, you know, I'm happier without that bit of money, thank you very much. But there must be a way to do this, and we will look into it. We're going to be doing a poll on the homepage of the website to get your thoughts about all of that. Now, on this edition of the show, we're going to visit one of the two remote viewers involved in the remote viewing 9/11 project of Courtney Brown from a couple of shows back. Dick Allgaier is his name. He's a former television newscaster and a man fully trained in remote viewing. He's in Hawaii. I'm going to put to him a representative selection of a few of the points that you've put to me about it. The most prevailing view, it seems to me, of yours about remote viewing is that you're very interested in it, but you're not sure whether it's genuine. So we're going to probe him on remote viewing, how it works and what it can achieve here. And we'll see if we get somewhere with it. And we'll talk to him about the methods that he uses and how he learned this, the whole nine yards. More great guests coming soon here on The Unexplained. If you would like to make a donation to the show, please go to the website, www.theunexplained.tv, the same place you can go if you want to send me an email about the way that I'm doing this show or just a bit of feedback about it. You know, I'd love to hear from you, and please keep spreading the word. Okay, right now, as the sun begins to climb down, if the sun can climb down from its high point in the sky and sky turns golden, let's settle in for the next hour with Dick Allgaier in Hawaii, and let's talk about remote viewing. Dick, thank you for coming on the show.
Hey, it's great to be here with you. I'm in Hawaii this morning.
I cannot believe that we are connecting between an autumnal kind of evening in London town and breakfast time in Hawaii. I've been there once. I went to Maui, but the reality of that 10 or 11 hour time difference, I think it doesn't hit until you're actually there and trying to talk back to here. Then you realize that sometimes you're still in the previous day.
Yes. Yeah. Well, jet lag, and but technology is great, isn't it, these days? The how we're able to communicate around the world.
Well, true enough. When I went to Maui with the Chris Tarrant breakfast show in London, which was the biggest music breakfast show, it was like kind of Scott Shannon show in New York, that big, that many listeners. When I went out there in 96, 97, we were able to connect, but only through very complex ISDN connections. There was no such thing as Skype. Nobody had Skype. Now we can do all kinds of digital communication, like the kind that we're doing right now. And you could almost be in the same room as me. The quality is that good. It is quite remarkable.
Well, then you must come back to Hawaii one day and
like
do
to.
Some broadcasts from Hawaii, since it's so easy.
You know, there were quite a few people that I met when I was out there who seemed to have had careers in radio in Los Angeles or in New York City in the big time and the fast lane, and had decided, look, I've got to a stage in my life, I don't want this anymore. And I remember one guy, unfortunately I can't remember his name, but he was on one of the big music stations in Maui, and they were doing this, it was the Super Bowl was on TV, and they were doing an outside broadcast, a remote, from a bar there. And I went down there with my recording gear. I thought, I'll put these people on air in London. And the next thing, the guy throws his mobile phone, his cell phone, at me, and I'm on air. And I'm building up the atmosphere, telling people how great it is, how they've got to get down to that bar now, and they're going to have the greatest evening, and they've got special offers on, and they've got the biggest widescreen TV there, and you can enjoy the Super Bowl right here with us. And it was just, it was the most bizarre experience, let me tell you, Dick.
Yeah.
But.
Well, it's wonderful here. I was lucky to meet a gentleman here who is teaching remote viewing, and that really sent my life off in a different direction. Now I maintained my career as a professional journalist, but in about the time you went to Maui, that 95-96 time frame, remote viewing burst onto the scene in the U.S., thanks in part to Dr. Courtney Brown, who you interviewed.
Well, that's right. I mean, the man that I was making contact with then, and only just starting to, was Major Ed Dames, the guy who was on the radio with Art Bell so many times, who's now not exactly disappeared. I got an email from him about 2 months ago, but I can't get him on this show. I don't know what he's doing at the moment, but he was the guy who brought me into all of this.
Yeah, I actually flew to the Big Island and met Ed Dames in 96, I believe, and I know Ed. I keep in touch with him from time to time.
Well, he's had an interesting life. He went to live in Ukraine for a while.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's another former military guy that I hooked up with, and I'll explain to your listeners a little bit about remote viewing, how it works. You know, people spend a lot of money to purchase DVDs or cassettes with special music or electronic sounds to put them into an altered state. You know, those music DVDs or CDs, rather, that have waterfalls and waves and heartbeats and some new age music embedded.
No, I've been given some of them. I've got them, yeah.
If you Google like theta tones, you'll get that. Well, it turns out that the U.S. military stumbled upon a way to do this with something they were using, and that is Morse code. Ed Dames was a Morse code operator. And I met this guy named Glenn Wheaton, who was a high-speed Morse intercept operator. And what he would do was listen to Morse code from behind the Iron Curtain all night and copy it. And one night, he was a little bit tired, having spent the day at an October festival in Augsburg, Germany. And that night, when he was listening to the Morse code, it lulled him into this altered state, and he saw the person sending the Morse code, a guy in a Russian uniform tapping on the Morse key. And they caught him drifting off to sleep and kicked him and said, you know, wake up. And he said, oh, I think I just saw the person sending the code.
Now, he was in that kind of half-asleep, half-awake state that sometimes we do see things, and I've always wondered whether those things that we see in that state are for real or just kind of overactive, hyperactive imagination?
Well, it can be both. It's that little window is a kickoff to many different things. And the key is, as a remote viewer, is to keep yourself on the what we call the signal line, the target that you intend to go see. So that is the purpose of what they call the protocols, the methodology, and the various military units came up with different ways to do this. There's a way to sit down in an alert state and gradually bring yourself to that near a sleep state, all the way you are little by little getting information about the target. So when I sit down to do a target, and by the way, I've worked for 17 years with this guy, Glenn Wheaton, who is, you've probably never heard of him because he was the absolute real deal. I mean, he did this for many years with U.S. Special Forces Intelligence, and they didn't publicize it much. When he got out, he agreed to teach it to some people, but he said, I don't want any money involved. No money will change hands. I'll do this for only people that want to do it, and it takes a long time to learn to do it well. So I've been doing it for 17 years.
And without giving away the secrets, without lifting the veil on it, because, you know, I know some people are making money out of courses for this, what sort, you said you had to do a lot to learn it properly. What sort of stages do you go through? Is it purely meditation? What is it?
No, it's the style that I used is primarily going after visuals. So if I were going to teach you the first thing, I would give you a target ID like A1, B2, C3, D4, which represents there would be a picture of a location, an event, a person, an object, or something. And that would be connected with the target ID that I would give you. And I would say, Howard, I want you to just close your eyes and look up at a certain place in a certain way. And there's a way to focus your eyes with your eyes closed and a way to look. And you close and you look for no more than 1.5 seconds, because anything after a second and a half invites your imagination. So you write that target ID on a place we call Blackboard. Close your eyes, you visualize that target ID, and then open your eyes and then close your eyes and look for 1 second and draw what you see. And you will amaze yourself if you do that. You've never tried that, probably. So that's the first 30 seconds of right. The protocols.
And you've just answered a very, very big question for me that I've never really... I've interviewed Major Ed Dames many times, and we've talked about the collective unconscious, which is like a repository of all information and all knowledge and everything that's out there. But this idea of only doing this for a second and a half, otherwise... you're distracted from it. That is the question that I wanted to get to, and you've answered it, because I always wondered, because I have a typical kind of Gemini, very active mind, it's all over the place. My Gemini friends, we can have conversations, and we can cover 20, 30 topics, because we know where we're going. My mind's all over the place all the time, and most people are a little bit like that. So the way to get round that problem is only to do this for very, very short bursts. Is that right?
Yes, and when we sit down and we begin the session with a paper and pen, and you're working very rapid fire. You're writing things down, you're making what we call ideograms, and then you're probing the ideogram. You're touching a line with a pen. As you work the session for about 30 to 40 minutes, every motion of your hand, every motion of your head, every motion of your eyes is dictated by the methodology. So you're not allowed to just sit there and let your mind wander. It's very structured. We use elements of neuro-linguistic programming that cause you to adopt physical characteristics that elicit this communication with your subconscious. So as you work the session and you get deeper and deeper into it, that 1.5 second window opens to 10 or 12 seconds. And ultimately, you can get to a point where you saw me in the 9/11 video. I'm standing at a whiteboard and I'm able to maintain that duplicity of awareness for long periods of time. I mean, I'm just talking and talking and things are coming out of me. But it's just brilliant the way the U.S. military figured this out. And the way what they devised, and it works, and it's really interesting. It's the most interesting thing I've ever been involved with.
One question. Of course, I watched the Courtney Brown presentation, all 3¾ hours or thereabouts of it, and I found it, as ever, fascinating, and I found what you were doing very, very interesting. You were wearing an earpiece. The guy in England wasn't wearing an earpiece. Why were you wearing an earpiece?
I create what we call an entrainment. I mentioned those DVDs, or I mean CDs, rather. Keep saying that. Those CDs that have the theta tones in that. I have some favorite light music with a little bit of this theta-inducing tones in it that for the last 12 or 15 years, whenever I remote view, I play that as a cool down and I play it while I remote view. It's halfway between white noise and a little soothing music and a little bit of something that puts my brain state into a little bit of theta.
It's almost so like those people that I had experience of when I was at school. I used to like to revise for exams in total silence, no distractions. I had friends who used to like to listen to rock music because it helped them focus.
Yeah, well, I can't focus with rock music, but what I listen to is this little tone, and what it does is it reminds my brain that this is where I'm supposed to be. It is comfortable to me. You know how you hear a song from your youth and you'll get the emotion of that time? I use the tones in my ear to remind me of the state of mind I need to be in. When I hear that, the music that I use, it puts me back in that frame of mind. It's just one little thing to help me along the way.
Courtney Brown is a great interviewee, as you know him much better than I do. I love the way he strings a narrative together, not only on his presentations but also in interviews. The one thing we didn't entirely explain, I don't think, was how he provides you and the other remote viewer, the guy in England, with the target. You were remote viewing 9/11, that's the Pentagon, that's that field in Pennsylvania, that's the Twin Towers. How do you give somebody those targets without giving it away? Because Courtney Brown swore to me that he didn't give it away to you. He didn't indicate to you in any way what you would be seeing.
No, he didn't.
How'd you get that?
I got an email from Courtney one day, and it said, "Dick, we would like to begin a new project. Can you start working some targets? The first target is 10A. And so I knew that 10A would be the first target cue for Project 10. And all I was told, it was Project 10. I knew nothing more than that. The target before that had involved the Great Pyramids. A target before that involved an anomaly on the ocean floor that showed up on Google Ocean or Google Earth. We were looking at what that was. Previous targets had involved future predictive targets involving an event that would be selected a month after I did the target. Wrap your mind around that. I would remote view an event that hadn't happened, hadn't been chosen yet. Courtney Brown would take my data, encrypt it, and then someone would select it without seeing what I had done. The point I'm making is that
sounds like a bizarre bit of reverse logic there. I mean, how can that work? If you're viewing something that hasn't happened yet, then you can make your findings fit any event in the future, can't you?
Well, no. And Courtney Brown actually had this published in a peer-reviewed scientific journal. The viewers would... Okay, like, this is September. So I would, in September, remote view something, and then I would take my session and give it to Courtney, and he would encrypt it so that it was published but not viewable, that you would get an encrypted file for download. Then a tasker, and the taskers were Glenn Wheaton and Lynn Buchanan, two former military viewers, would look at events the next month, like in October. And then in November, they would select the event and task that and give it a target ID. So it was a reverse bit of logic there, but it worked.
But my skeptical listeners would say, okay, you might well have said, I see group of people fleeing from a building. This building is full of money. There are people behind counters in this building. These people are fleeing. I see a man with a gun. It's a bank robbery. So any bank robbery a little down the track, a month later, you can say, my God, he viewed that bank robbery, the one in Chicago.
Well,
tell me why that's not so.
One of the targets that I drew was I drew a satellite in space. I drew a very detailed sketch of a satellite. And the target that was selected was the launch of a satellite, which was the one that I drew. There was another one, let me recall. I drew people marching back and forth in formation, playing drums in a outdoor arena that looked like it had was the side of a cliff. It was rock walls, and there were people in stands above this rock cliff, and then there were lights shining on the people who were marching back and forth in formation. And the event that was selected was the military tattoo. It was like a bagpipe demonstration.
That sounds like the Edinburgh tattoo.
Yeah, Edinburgh. It was the Edinburgh, and there's a castle right there.
Yeah,
the rock also.
Yeah, and it's a huge floodlit event.
I'll send you the session that I did. It's quite remarkable how I described it, and it just like, what are the odds of that? So yeah,
and,
there was.
Had you ever seen the Edinburgh tattoo? It used to be on television on the BBC every year. You've never seen it.
About it.
Right. Okay. Well, that's pretty interesting.
Well,
yeah.
The point is, when Courtney gave us the 9/11, we had no idea. I didn't know if it was a past event, like the centuries ago when they were building the pyramids. I didn't know if it was current time. I didn't know if it was on this planet. I didn't know if it might have been a future prediction, or, you know, something that was trying to be predictive. So I had no idea of the timeline or anything. So what I did was I generated my own target IDs. I went to a random letter generator, and I think you can see on the board something like SOBU-10A. So that would be my target ID. That's what I knew. My intent was, all right, this is Courtney's project. This is the first target for that. Then what I would do was I would send in my paper and pen session to Courtney, and he would answer me back saying, okay, can you do some more of that on whiteboard? I would say, okay. And that's all he would tell me. So along the way, we were given no feedback. I did these sessions over the course of May, June, July, 2.5 months. So it took me 10 or 11 weeks to do the 5 or 6 sessions.
But by the time you got to the end of them, and we'll cover all the bits in between, but let's just leap ahead a little here, and there's a specific reason why I'm doing that. Towards the end, you're sketching out on the whiteboard what's obviously Twin Towers and the New York skyline. Your conscience must have said, oh, this is 9/11, well before that point.
Here's how that happened. I was working, and I saw what I thought was an avalanche at first. I thought, wow, that's an avalanche crashing down this cloud of smoke. When you get a visual and a perception, it's hazy, it's indistinct. It's like looking through a keyhole with gauze over it, or, you know, a lens with Vaseline. It's like looking backwards through a telescope, and you get just feelings and ideas. So my feelings and ideas and my visual capture was of a you know how an avalanche looks? The snow just turns into this big roiling, boiling cloud that's crashing down. So I think there's a moment where I'm standing at the board. I'm saying, this is like an avalanche. And I looked again and I said, but there are buildings. And I said, wow, it's not an avalanche. And so...
And that didn't focus your conscious mind on one of the most famous events, if not the most famous event of recent times.
Okay. There was a moment where, and I said, boy, this just reminds me of 9/11.
Mm.
And so what I did was I stopped and I said, once your conscious mind starts to try to figure it out, you're done. Is a that you're not remote viewing. You can, in my 17 years experience as a remote viewer, if you think you've figured out what the target is, you are 99% of the time wrong, and you will start making a fool of yourself. You'll lose the signal line and you will be wrong. So what I did was I stopped, and this 9/11 thought just kept haunting me. And so I wrote an email to Courtney and I said, look, I have a problem with this project. I've got to do something to just get my mind straight. So I'm going to send you a session that I just need to get off my chest. So I did some of that. I drew the planes into the Twin Towers, and I just let all that go. And I sent that to him. And he sent me back an email that said, Dick, doubt is a very good thing for any remote viewer.
Huh.
Just continue your sessions. You know, just go do another session. And so I read that and I thought, yeah, I was expecting him to say, well, yeah, okay, good work. You got it. Or I was expecting him to say, oh, no, you have no idea what this is.
But he doesn't do that, does he? He doesn't even,
no, he wouldn't,
he doesn't even talk about future projects.
Because,
yeah.
So at the end, after Daz and I had both completed all of our work, we didn't communicate throughout the process. I knew that Daz was working some targets. Apparently there were some other viewers that were trying this, but I wasn't aware of them. I didn't find out until just a couple weeks ago that some other viewers had submitted work, but it wasn't included in the project. So I did all my sessions and I said to Courtney, look, I'm done. I can't do any more. And he says, well, I probably got what I need. All right. And I said, is Daz done? He said, yeah, Daz is done. You can talk to him. So I got Daz's communication and I set up a Skype.
Right. And we've got to say Daz is the guy in Bath in the UK.
Yeah. Yeah. So now finally we've done everything. We can't send in any more data, but we can talk. So I talked to Daz, looked at my work and I looked at his work. And I was just shocked. I went, oh my God, I did this session where I saw a missile and he saw a missile. Wow. And then I said, wow, I saw these guys planning this meeting where they were planning something. And I said there were like 8 to 12 people. And he said there were 8 to 12 people and described them as the same type of gentleman. And I looked and I thought, I think Daz must have seen my work. He's copying my stuff.
And what you both absolutely correlated on, and that's very impressive from the video presentation, was the matter-of-fact malevolence of it all. These people, had evil intent, but it was evil intent that for these people was just another day at the office.
So anyway, I'm looking at, there was that, and Daz had described the same thing, and I looked at his, I finally saw a video of him that was uploaded to me, and I thought, he's duplicating my session. I go, that guy saw my session and he's somehow doing what I did. So I called Courtney and I said, Courtney, do you have chain of custody on our work? I mean, you write this. Yeah. And it turns out that Daz had done his session before me. So I knew in my mind that there was no way he was copying it, because it was confirmed to me that he did the work first. And I know I hadn't seen his. So we did duplicate. All right. So Daz and I are talking. At this point, we're still not sure. I said to him, I think a couple aspects of this target either involve 9/11 or something like 9/11. I know there's a building that gets destroyed in an urban area. But, and I just kept thinking of 9/11. He goes, I had some 9/11 thoughts too. But we didn't know that See, we had done so many targets, like the planning meeting. I didn't know that I didn't know if how that related to the building coming down or the missile. The day I did the missile session was just, okay, I'm doing target 10E or whatever. And I hadn't done a session in like 2 or 3 weeks. So I'm doing my thing, and I initially perceive, oh, there's a city kind of in the distance, and there's a kind of flat area with some trees and not real tall buildings, but buildings. And there's one prominent structure. Oh, and there's a river and a freeway, and there's a bridge over the river. Well, you don't know what's important, what you're supposed to be looking at. So I spent like 10 minutes describing the bridge. Okay, this bridge is like half mile across. There's boats going under it. The river is slow moving. It's kind of murky. I got the smells of it. So I'm describing the river. There's no thought of 9/11 with this. I'm thinking, why do they want to know about the bridge or why the river? That's just happened to be where I landed. And then, so I'm describing this area, and all of a sudden I go, oh, something just streaked overhead. I'll look at that. And I said, I don't know if that was energy. Knowing Courtney Brown, I thought, maybe it's a UFO. Could this be a UFO sighting? Mm-hmm. You know, that got my attention, so I'm going to look at it. So I said, well, that was streaking over, and it was long and kind of tubular and moving fast and thrust. So I eventually got back, and I saw the thing being launched like a cruise missile. So I sent that in, and Courtney goes, can you just do some of that on the whiteboard? I said, okay. So I did the whole bridge thing and the whole river so there was no thought of 9/11 with that. I thought, well, somebody launched a missile.
Because all of this is counterintuitive, isn't it, to what we know? What most people on the street, most journalists know, is that a bunch of people from Al-Qaeda hijacked aeroplanes and crashed them into the Twin Towers, and there was an aeroplane strike on the Pentagon, and there was another one planned, but some people on board made sure that that didn't come to fruition, and at least that part of it was thwarted. Now, we're thinking, as ordinary people, Al-Qaeda. Those were not the impressions you were getting. It was almost as if the hijackers, Attar, and all the others were subsidiary to all of this.
Well, and I believe Courtney, I don't know Courtney's mind when he was tasking this, but he says in the video that he was expecting the official story to come out. He thought we would describe the official story. So he says he was surprised when we didn't do that. But no, neither Daz nor I saw any Arab hijackers or men in caves. I did do one session where the first time I closed my eyes and looked, I saw a silhouette of a man with a windows behind him, and I looked again, and I said, wow, that looks like a cockpit. And then I looked, and I saw the epaulets, those things they wear on their shoulder, and he had a headset on.
Yeah, and you drew that, yeah, I know, yeah, I saw it.
Okay, so again, I wasn't thinking of 9/11. There had been that Malaysian airliner that disappeared. And so you can't think about that, but okay, could it be Amelia Earhart? Could it be the guys on the Enola Gay dropping the atomic bomb? Could it be the Malaysia airline? Could it be TWA Flight 800? You can't go those ways, although all those things flash in your mind. So I just said, okay, well, there's these guys in a cockpit. And then it became experiential for me. You can see me on the tape. I'm going, they're not strong enough. You know, I was like trying to push and I didn't know what they call it. Oh, the yoke. Yeah, the thing that they steer the plane with. They couldn't move it.
And that was a very powerful, for me, one of the most powerful parts of the whole thing, because there you are saying, here is a pilot who cannot control his aircraft. Now, I would never have thought of that in connection with 9/11. I've had lots of conspiracy theory thoughts about it. I've never really believed the official story we've been told is the right story. I would never have thought about a pilot piloting a plane that he could not control.
Well, it surprised me, and it's just what I thought of, and So I'm submitting all this stuff, and no one's telling me anything like, hey, good work, or tell me more about the pilot. It was just like, okay, well, we're going to need you to do a different target. So sometimes when they tell you move to a different target, that means you're off. Like you might do it, do a half a session and submit it. And if you haven't exhibited target contact, they just tell you, well, move to do something else, try again. So I didn't know when I'm told, all right, do another target, if the work I'd done was good, or I thought, man, I went off on this imagination run here. It wasn't until I get feedback that then you go, oh my God, and you start looking at it. You know, it's interesting, but also a bit humbling and sobering. There are researchers now pouring over our sessions, 9/11 researchers that are finding a lot of interesting stuff, things that I didn't have any clue about.
And when you talk about researchers, are they people that we would categorize as would-be conspiracy theorists, or are these people seriously researching and investigating history?
Well, I think both. They're names that I wasn't a 9/11 truth seeker or researcher prior to this, so they're names that aren't familiar to me, but I'm getting emails from Courtney, and some of this, like, I wouldn't give out the names right now.
I was surprised last year.
Courtney sent me an email going, hey, this is interesting, and someone will write an email saying, hey, when you said bearer bonds, did you know that there was a whole cover-up of blah, blah, blah? And there was one moment in the session where I said, okay, there's this building and these guys, oh, they do forgeries here. They make like bearer bonds, like forged securities. And Courtney put that in the final edit, and I didn't understand why. I didn't know what that would possibly have to do with 9/11. But it turns out that there were explosions in some of the buildings, and you know, Building 7 was brought down. That was the third building that just mysteriously dropped, like a controlled demolition on 9/11. Well, apparently there was the Office of Naval Intelligence, which was the office in the Pentagon that got hit. According to this article I was just given, Office of Naval Intelligence was investigating securities fraud, like fake bearer bonds or something. And that was the office that was hit. There was a lot of money that was unaccounted for. And some of the investigative offices and some of the evidence was in Building 7. So this claim is that there was this huge financial fraud, and 9/11 helped destroy the evidence on that and cover that up. So Dick, it's one of many theories. I don't know if any of this is true or not. You know, as a remote viewer, you're kind of like a rat in a maze. You don't see the big picture. You're just like, I know that if I do this certain thing with pen and paper and think a certain way and put my attention toward this target ID that is totally blind to me, I'm like a rat. If I go here and take a right turn and then take a left turn and do this, I'll get a little piece of cheese. But while you're doing that, you don't know the bigger picture, like why you're seeing that, or who tasked the target, or anything about that.
You know that I went to the site of Ground Zero twice, once for the first anniversary, once for the second anniversary, and broadcast back to London. They were marathon broadcasting sessions. I was awake for 3 days both times and met a lot of the people involved, some of the survivors, some of the families of people who died, the people in the hotel, the Marriott Financial and the Hilton Hotel, stayed at both of those hotels. But what surprised me on the first anniversary was a lot of the area around Ground Zero, I'm talking about cafes and offices and shops, were frozen in time, left exactly as they had been when they'd been evacuated, when all that panic hit. Wow. Were you not tempted to look at what that was like because if I was a remote viewer, I would want to know what the experience was like for people in places like the little coffee bar, very, very close to Ground Zero, the closest coffee bar to it, where the clock stopped as the towers came down and the menus were on the floor. I saw that. There was a Burger King very, very close. That was frozen in time. And then I started to think, what must it have been like to be in those towers? Because the thousands of people who died within the towers will have the best idea of what exactly the experience was like, and maybe what caused the experience, the best idea of all, wouldn't they? I wondered, why were you not tempted to look at them, even though that would be difficult?
I was drawn to that, and I have about 4 hours of my own material that I'm going to release. I don't want to, you know, take any of the thunder away from Courtney's presentation right now, like that's the main thing, we did it for him, but I do have about 4 hours of material, and sometime next year I will release all of that, all my raw data. And I have an audio recording of myself where I first hit the target, and I was in a group of people, and this was experiential, like we're outside, we all ran outside, look up there, oh my God, what was that, oh look at that. And there was smoke in the air, and to me it was like Pompeii or watching the space shuttle Challenger explode. If you were right there when the space shuttle blew up, it was a bunch of people. We were shocked, frightened, aghast, confused, and then it was like running. Oh my God, run, run, run. And You hear me in this kind of altered state go, I just got knocked down, like somebody made me trip and I fell down.
But of course, we've all seen many, many times the video of people being overcome by the rubble, the debris, the mashed up smoke of it all, and they just collapse to the ground and then have to clear their eyes and run again.
But in my consciousness, as I was experiencing that, again, it's that tunnel vision. Mm. I didn't know it was 9/11. I just knew it was like, oh, we're running and there's smoke in the air. Mm. So, and this lasted for, it was a loop that I could play, you know, like 10 seconds that I could experience and then fade out and then play a little bit of it again. It's hard to describe the experience of remote viewing, but I didn't have an overview of like, oh, this is 9/11, the building just came down, we're running. No, it's more of just a pure visceral little, oh, boy, the smoke. And because I didn't know what the target was, I didn't put it together. There was a time, and this is in the video, where it was, I believe, the missile, it hit the Pentagon, and I was describing a group of people that were saying, did you see that? No, I didn't see it, but I felt it. Well, I heard it. Look, it hit there, you know, and the like, wow, what was that? So you do get those emotions, but you're not omniscient. It's kind of like you have a tapestry or a sweater or something, you can grab one thread, and when you get a hold of one thread, you can pull on it. And you can keep pulling it, and you can unravel a little more and a little more, but it's very difficult to see the whole pattern in the sweater.
If I was a remote viewer, the one thing I would want to do, and this may make you laugh, it's a nice thought for me, would be to remote view what's in the thought process of the person who sets the six numbers for the British National Lottery every week, so that I could win it. Why don't you do that?
We're trying to do that. I do lotteries at least every week.
But shouldn't, if the remote viewing works, you should win them every time, shouldn't you?
It's really hard because there are so many. The way I do it is, I take the card. I'll send you one. The card is 59 numbers and then 35 numbers for the Powerball. So I visualize that card in my mind, and I close my eyes and I see where the winning numbers will be as a splotch, as a dot, and I can I come so close. I mean, I'll get 2-3 numbers, and then I'll be one off. On a good night, my pattern will look exactly like the pattern on the card, but when I look at it in my mind's eye and then open my eyes and look at the card, I don't get it exactly on the right one. I think what we need to do is invest enough money to do all the possible patterns in that area. But we're doing that. Your subconscious mind is like a child. It doesn't do numbers very well. You can't read things. Like, I was at a Target one time where the Target was a plaque. It was actually the plaque at the school book depository in Dallas. And I saw it, and I go, oh, there's a metallic plaque with writing on it. And when I tried to see the writing, it was like a language I didn't understand. And when I tried to read it, I popped right off Target, and I was back at my desk. It brings too much of your analytical mind into it.
If you ever won something like the lotto, say you got the numbers and you won the money, would you tell the world that that's how you did it?
I think so.
Hmm?
Yeah.
Well, I'm waiting for that day. Listen,
we are trying to do the lottery. I'll tell you, speaking of people's minds and the minds of the planners of 9/11 who were so cold, I did a case about 3 years ago, 4 years ago, that was we don't do too many of these because there's so many of them, and it just messes with your mind. But it was a woman who'd been murdered in the Northwest U.S. and I saw the guy disposing of her remains, and I thought what he thought, and that haunted me for days. To his The thought of trying to get rid of this body, that what he was thinking, and it was just like he was mad, like, oh God, what a mess, I got to get rid of this, like, and he was just mad at her for that he had to get rid of this. It was so unlike anything I would think.
And so that's the big issue, isn't it? What is this information for now? In that case, well, it might have helped detection authorities to catch somebody. In the case of 9/11, this narrative that together you and your colleague in the UK and Courtney Brown, you've all come up with, well, there was a bunch of people who planned this whole thing, which is a pretty big revelation in itself. But I wonder, what's it for? At the end of the day, what is it to do? It's not entertainment.
No, it's beyond entertainment. And that is... a good question. I mean, this ability is here, and this remarkable skill. What do we do with it? What do you want to do with remote viewing? You know, what can I do with this after 17 years? I can't do anything alone. You need a team. I would like to someday find something significant. I would like to be able to say to authorities, this, what you're looking for, the remains, the treasure, the downed airplane, is like, point someone to it and have them go find it.
Well, I've had emails from listeners saying, why didn't these people get right onto the case of Flight MH370, find it now, and put the poor families of the victims of that, we're assuming they're victims, out of their misery?
Well, for one thing, it's very difficult to do current event targets. Remember when the Malaysian plane had disappeared, it was all over every news broadcast every night. If you were to come to me at the height of that and say, well, Dick, we've got an important target for you, you need to work this, I couldn't. I would it's you have to have no idea what the target might be. I mean, 9/11, we waited 13 years. Mm.
Otherwise,
years.
I understand that. Otherwise, you're lost in the fog of newspaper headlines and things that you might have seen on TV.
Yeah, it's very difficult to do current events.
Can I run past you a few things? And these are just randomly picked reflections that people have sent me by email since they heard the presentation. They heard about Courtney Brown's presentation and your work. Sergio said, I don't believe in this, but it interests me. I think you probably get that a long time. Bob said, this is meaningless mumbo jumbo. You must get that a lot as well. Dave thinks it's worth listening to, but he's not quite sure why. And then Paul emails me to say, okay, what you said was lacking in evidence. That's what he said. But a good listen, interesting story, and he'd like to see you predict the results of some horse races. So there's just a little smorgasbord of reaction that I got from people, and there's more, but it's all very similar to that. What do you say?
Well, people have their opinions. I've never really cared to... As a remote viewer, you could spend your whole time trying to prove remote viewing, and I just don't do that. And that was at the urging of my instructor. He said, never remote view to prove remote viewing. I did a session for Korean Broadcasting. They sent a documentary crew to Hawaii to do a story about us. And I knew they were going to say, hey, work a target on camera. And we said, look, we're not going to work a target on camera, but you can film us. That afternoon, before I met them, I just sat down and I said, okay, they're going to give me a target. So I worked a session and I put it in an envelope. And when I met the producers, I gave them the envelope. I said, seal this up, sign it, and put the time and the date, okay, and hold on to it. And they said, well, will you work a target for us? And we said, well, it probably won't work, but you can film us, you can videotape us working. So they selected a target. And it was what I had drawn. So while I did it for them on camera, I didn't get much valuable data. But after they showed me the target, I said, well, take that envelope out and look at it. And I had drawn it pretty exactly. And what they said was, their jaw dropped. And they said, can you do that again? It's like, well, I just did it for you. Now you want me to do it again. So what I would say to people who doubt this is, you know, go to the Courtney Brown site, farsight.org, and look at there's some proof up there. There's some scientific, his Multiple Universes project. That was the one that was done for a peer-reviewed journal. Oh, and by the way, I should plug this for Courtney. The 9/11 video, if you want to watch that, if you go to farsight.org, www.farsight, farsight.org, that'll give you a link. The best way to prove remote viewing to people is to teach them a little 10-minute class and have them do a target. I had a woman that I was having a business meeting with a few months ago. I told her I was doing something, and she was not skeptical, but kind of, oh, that's nice. I said, hey, have you ever tried this? Like, okay, here's a target ID. Look at this. ABCD-EFGH. That could be anything, anywhere, anything, anytime. You have no idea, right? I said, okay, just close your eyes for a second, look up, and look for 1 second and see if you see anything. And she goes, I don't see anything. I said, just draw something. So she drew it. I said, just relax, close your eyes, look again, and just draw a shape or a form. She drew it. She drew the target, a really good likeness of it. And, you know, I said, okay, look at this. How did you do that? And her jaw just dropped. She was, oh, my God. So people don't know what they're capable of if they haven't tried it. I think almost everyone has had a moment where they know something, where they have a premonition, where you think of an old friend that you haven't talked to in 10 years, and then they call you up out of the blue. Hey, I was just thinking of you.
I think that happens a lot, and that is partly telepathy, I guess. Things used to happen to me when I did, for all of those years, outside broadcast, remote broadcast from different places in the world, and I would meet some of our listeners who'd be out there with us. And I remember telling one woman that she would live in a cottage, and I described very specifically the door of this cottage. Now, she was not living in a cottage. She was living in a town, not in the country. And she wasn't with anybody, wasn't married or anything. And I kind of suggested she would be married without saying it. And the person who she would marry would have a home like this with a door like this. And I described this very unusual door. And I don't know, to this day, I don't know why I told her this or how I got that information. 1 year later, and I was still at Capital Radio in London, and this is a true story, I got an email from her saying, all of that happened, and I'm now living in that place. How could you have known that? And my only answer to her was, I have no idea. Is that connected to what you do?
Yeah. Yeah, it's all... You have a subconscious awareness Okay, let me explain this on the radio. I'd do this better if I had a board that I could draw it, but you understand the dimensions of time and space. I believe that consciousness is also a dimension. So you have this dimension of consciousness where everything that has ever happened or is going to happen in the near future, past, present, future, at different locations, it all still exists there. So you giving that remote broadcast at that location, that energy in that field is still resonating there. You know, consciousness has moved on, but it still exists in consciousness in that place. Everything that ever happened is still resonating. When you look at a YouTube video and you have the little slider at the bottom and you're scrolling through video, you can move that slider forward and backward and you can replay a scene, or you can go forward and watch a scene in the future. You as a human being, you have your point of view that is right here and now localized. I believe that the human brain is a filter of sorts, which is necessary for us in this three-dimensional experience to keep us in the here and now, so that you can not walk off the cliff, so that you can find food, so that you can hear a car coming so you don't step in front of it. So we're locked into our point of view of our consciousness is right in the here and now, but you have a subconscious, and every human being comes standard off the shelf with this subconscious awareness that exists in this greater dimension of consciousness. And what happens is we get little leakages of communication with that from time to time. And that might be you having the premonition about that woman in the cottage. It might be you knowing that your friend is going to call you.
So these are ripples in the pond. And in this particular instance, the ripples were coming from that event of that woman getting married and going to live in that cottage with that door. And those ripples were somehow reaching me in the Maldives or Dubai, wherever we happened to be. I think it was Dubai. Right.
Yeah, and so your consciousness in Dubai, you might have been jet-lagged and tired.
Oh, yes, I was always jet-lagged and tired, Dick. Always jet-lagged and tired.
Yeah. So what happened was your subconscious came in that door and you communicated with it. Remote viewing teaches you how to displace a portion of your subconscious awareness to wherever that target points you, and then you establish a communication pathway with the subconscious. So it's just establishing communication with your subconscious within the greater field of consciousness.
Dick, why don't you and your colleague, why don't you remote view what is on Mars and whether those things are ancient artifacts? And then you would do the world a great service because you would answer that great question. All that stuff that the Curiosity gave us pictures of, and people like Richard C. Hoagland say, well, there's regular geometry there. Those are parts of something, looks like ancient machinery, and I look at some of those pictures and I think, yeah, maybe that's so. You could prove it, couldn't you?
Well, we did. Courtney Brown did. That was one of the targets he gave us in the mystery series a couple of years ago. It's on farsight.org. There was an anomaly, a photograph that showed something suspicious looking, and Courtney used that as the target ID, as the target photo, rather. I just used a random number, but I drew that. It's remarkable how, I mean, I saw the anomaly. I drew it exactly. And then we saw all kinds of structures underneath there. And we did that.
Hawaii, where you live, is a very open-minded place. There are people there who have amazing connections to the past. It's a place of myth and mystery. There are ghosts there, and you know, I remember being told about a golf course they tried to build on the site of an ancient burial site, and these ancient warriors are said to have risen up from the ground and frightened a Japanese golfer almost to death. Yeah. You know, Hawaii is that kind of place. I wonder, do you share information about what you do with people that you meet there? Do you tell them what you do and how you do it?
Yeah, I pretty much do, and some believe it. Some think I'm crazy. Some think there's something to it, but they don't want to know too much about it. And some are very interested. So, yeah, the Hawaii, the Night Marchers, that's the legend of the There are night marchers here. There was the station that I worked at a long time was haunted. A bunch of us saw some weird stuff there.
Really? What did you see?
Well, yeah, there was... It was built on an old Catholic cemetery. And in order to disturb this cemetery, had to rebury the bones and then give a certain number of units to the Catholic priests who had condos there. But yeah, I was in the basement, and it was creepy. I just felt a presence there, and other reporters had seen figures that shouldn't be there. So,
well, it's like you say, everything that's ever happened, I think, leaves an imprint. I worked on a pirate radio ship very, very briefly off Tel Aviv called The Voice of Peace. And the story went, there's a basement, the very bottom of the ship. I don't know what they call it, like the very bottom of the ship where you're at the bottom of the hull, the keel area, whatever it might be. And I used to go down there periodically, but I didn't like it. There was an exercise bike there and a lot of rust down there. But at least it was a place to get away from people. But there was a terrible cold intensity about it. And I was later told, mm-hmm. the story went, that I think it was an engineer or somebody who'd worked on that ship had hanged himself down there. So, as you say, I think all events have imprints in time, and those imprints can reach you backwards or forwards in ripples. And that's what makes this fascinating. A lot of people are going to email me and say, this is rubbish, that guy's been living on Hawaii so long that he slowed down to the point he's almost stopped. Maybe they're not getting the point. But what would you say to them?
I would say I've been a mainstream television journalist, producer, reporter, news anchor. You well know, because you're in the business, you cannot have one mistake. If you're a news reporter, being accurate is the crucial thing.
Well, you can have one mistake, but it will probably be your last.
Well, yeah. You can't knowingly put something false over the air. You can have an honest mistake, but you always attribute something. You always attribute it. So you attribute it, such and such said this. Mm. Well, if it wasn't true, it's at least what they said. But the point is, I've won national awards. I've won Society for Professional Journalist Excellence in Journalism awards. I've been involved in broadcasts that won Emmys. I've won the Associated Press Mark Twain Award and a bunch of other awards. I've been a long time on the air. And the one thing that is your stock in trade, the one thing you're worth, is your credibility. I would never knowingly broadcast a falsehood. And remote viewing is something that I got interested in as a hobby, as a sidelight, but it's real. I've experienced it, and I've seen it and done it under scientific conditions. So human beings are just capable of much more than they're aware of.
And on that, we can absolutely agree, because I've seen too many examples and felt them in my own life to suggest otherwise. That is the fact. We have abilities and capabilities that we're only scratching the surface of. Dick, lovely to talk with you, and amazing to be able to speak across 10,000 miles in such amazing quality. And I know that, it's morning time still for you. You probably haven't even had breakfast yet, but, you know, it's just an amazing thing for me to be here in the gathering darkness, because it's getting dark now here, and you're coming out of the darkness and you're going into the day. Maybe that's...
I'm going to go swim in the beautiful turquoise ocean. Uh-oh. I'm going to have my morning swim.
Do you know what? The wonderful place that I discovered when I was on Maui was a place called Kimo's in Lahaina. I don't know if you know, but it's a famous restaurant. I don't know if I'll ever see it again, but we sat outdoors at this restaurant, had the most amazing meal, and there were flaming torches. It wasn't lit by electricity. There were flaming torches all around us, and we looked out and we could see whales. I think that was one of the greatest moments of my life, even though it was a working trip. That probably the last night that we were there before flying back to London. Kimo's in Lahaina. One day I'd like to go back.
Maybe I've been there. It's a great place. Please come back. Look me up when you do. We'll go have dinner. I'd love to hear your tales of the pirate radio ship. That's an interesting history of radio.
A lot of stuff, a lot of people. I'd like to meet some more wonderful people in Hawaii, because I met quite a few last time, and I know there are many, many more, and they were very kind to me. Dick Allguy, thank you very much indeed for being on this show.
It's been wonderful talking with you. Thanks so much.
The thoughts and literally the views of Dick Allguy are there on Remote Viewing. Let me know what you thought about him and what he had to say. You can go to the website, www.theunexplained.tv, and you can send me an email with your thoughts and suggestions about anything. This show, previous shows, ideas for future shows, love to hear from you. Go to the website, www.theunexplained.tv, the website designed and created by Adam Cornwell, a creative hotspot in Liverpool. Thank you very much for all of your support. More great shows in the pipeline. A future show, could be the next one, is going to be about aliens, hopefully, and their interaction with, claimed, our nuclear facilities, our weapons and that sort of stuff, through history and right up to the present day. So I'm trying to tie that one down right now. Watch and listen to this space. Thank you very much for all of your support, the nice things you said. Please keep your comments coming. Keep me on the straight and narrow. Tell me where I'm getting it right, where I'm getting it wrong. Like to hear from you. And if you want to make a donation to the show, you can do that on the website as well. More great shows, like I say, coming. And until next we meet here on The Unexplained, my name is Howard Hughes. I am in London. And please stay safe, stay calm in this uncertain world, and stay in touch above all. Thank you very much. Take care. Bye-bye.